Here's the thing, Mandy.
What's the thing, Charlie?
Not enough people are talking about trains.
That's true. Nobody I know is talking about trains.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It should be top of mind for everyone. We should be talking about trains at least 200% more.
They are terribly important.
They are terrible. They're very interesting at the very least.
I agree.
And we should also be riding trains like 500% more.
Oh, yeah.
At least.
Trains are great. Bare minimum. Yes.
Yeah. They are much cooler than bikes. No, no, no. Wait. No. I did not say that. They are almost as cool as bikes.
Almost as cool. Yes.
And much cooler than cars and planes, which are very boring.
Yeah.
Never understood the appeal of cars. And planes are just like, whatever. But, like, a can of farts in the air, so. Trains.
Yeah.
Are very rad.
They are.
So we need to make trains rad again. Make trains rad again. What will it take to get you investing in trains, Mandy? What can I say to get you investing in a train today?
You can say that Via Rail is going to have Wi-Fi.
Oh, well, that is one step too far than we can promise you.
Because it doesn't right now.
We can, however, promise very uncomfortable seats.
Ooh!
Yes, 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 yes. And endless delays.
Yay!
Sign me up. And food that will probably run out, and you'll be reduced to eating dried peanuts.
That sounds excellent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Bring back the sexiness of train travel.
All right.
All right.
A deal is made. We struck an accord.
Hi, everybody. This is the Juiciest Bits podcast, and we are the hosts, Mandy and
Charlie,
and we're ready to talk movies and
how Walter Matthau's bucket hat is really a sign of authority
and everything in between.
But first, give me one movie thing you've been watching, reading, thinking about this past couple weeks since our last episode.
Well, because I teach about movies, I've been thinking a lot about multi-form texts and the way that a character...
Explain to us dummies what multi-form texts are.
Yeah, So texts where you have a protagonist who experiences several different worlds, sometimes simultaneously. So actually yesterday I rewatched Donnie Darko. Which I hadn't seen for years.
Notable journalist, Donnie Darko. Yeah.
How great it is and what a good example of multi-form storytelling it is, because he's sort of in two, at least two worlds all the time. And it made me remember the line about how Rose Darko is not taking Sparkle Motion as seriously as she should. And that made me happy. But yeah, so I've been thinking about different worlds, different communities within stories and how they interact.
Do you think that has any relevant, like everyone's big on the multiverses right now. Do you think that has any place in the multiverse conversation?
Yeah, I definitely do. I mean, I think the biggest thing is multiverse stories aren't new. Mm-hmm. As much as they seem to be sort of the big new thing, they're not at all new. We see them in The Matrix and in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and all of these movies that sort of dare to think about dreams and reality and things like that. So the multiverse movies are actually sort of the simplest iteration of multi-form storytelling, I think, on the fly right now.
Mm, beautiful. Love it. Well done.
Thank you.
Sounds great.
And you?
Well, I was going to at first say, so I watched Almodovar's new gay cowboy short film.
Oh.
Strange Way of Life.
Wonderful.
A few days ago. And that is now my way of life, obviously. then, after Aaron had talked about The Town in such glowing terms, I decided to go back and rewatch it to see if it was better than I remembered.
Oh. And?
Turns out, no.
No.
Aaron was entirely incorrect. It is a terrible movie.
He's so smart and so correct about so many things, but not about The Town.
It is so brutal.
Yeah.
And like equally stupid and self-serious, like all the worst things about Ben Affleck, basically.
It's true.
And he slept through, once again, I'll never stop saying it. He slept through all 3 hours of Blade Runner 2049.
And then asked what he missed.
So, yeah. We can't be winners all the time, is what I'm saying. Anyways, movie is not great. Rebecca Hall is great, but the movie in yeah. general is not great. But it did leave me with a thing that I can't stop thinking about.
Oh.
Even more than Pete Postlethwaite pretending to be a Boston florist. there's one scene in the movie, and it's just like this tiny little detail that just caught me, and I like it's now my obsession. So there's like they're in like this like community center or church hall or something, and in the corner there's one of those like old fashioned like velvet like church banners.
Uh-huh.
That usually says something like Jesus saves or something. Yeah, yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah. We all know the type, and it just says Easy Does It.
I want that.
And I need it. So bad. It's my life now.
Oh, terrific. Right.
Well, down to business. This is Heist Movies Take Two.
Mm-hmm.
We did Con Air last time. We sure so did. So, naturally this time, we chose what many have called Con Air's spiritual successor.
Even though it was made first.
Bother me not with trifles.
What is time? Time is a flat circle.
Time is a flat circle. So what do we watch?
We watched The Taking of Pelham 123 from 1974.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Starring Walter Matthau, who is the best.
Not to be confused with the Tony Scott remake that was part of the Denzel Washington versus Trains extended universe.
A very good extended universe.
Oh, yeah. Very important. At least two films in that extended.
At least two. So it's more of just a universe.
Just, yeah. I mean, yeah, no. It could be extended.
It could, yeah.
I still hold out hope. Extended further.
Add extra cars to it.
See, a train is an extended universe, wouldn't you say? Endlessly extendable. yes. I was also thinking, we started out with, like, a heist category for this go-round, but it could have just as easily fallen into the planes, trains, and automobiles.
Oh!
Because, of course,
yeah,
our next film needs to be a Fast and Furious movie.
Obviously.
Okay, good. Thank you. I'm glad you're I was feeling a little bit nervous. Like, you know how, like, people who, like, propose on live television? They're like, I really hope this works.
You were proposing Fast and Furious.
I was,
to me.
Yes, exactly.
I a thousand you times accepted. Yes.
Yay! She said yes.
We will now be insufferable on Instagram.
Oh, yes, yeah. endless photos of a tiny Vin Diesel wrapped around our fingers.
Yes. Oh.
While we stand on beaches.
Now we gotta start an Instagram account.
And wear shared wife beaters.
Yes. Of course.
Talk about Familia forever.
I will not shave my head, though.
I mean, that's all right. That's fine.
Okay.
I'll shave my head.
Very good.
I was thinking, though, that there's something there about this obsession, like, reliance on transportation and heist movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I don't have anything necessarily thought out around that just yet, but maybe it was to do with, like, how these crimes often are boiling complex bureaucratic systems.
Yeah.
Which often feel like abstract things, right? But like, something like a transit system is, like, it's complex integral. But concrete.
Yeah.
And it's, like, the complexity is really visible.
Mm-hmm. And they tend to, you know, guarantee hostages. Like, people use them every day. And even with Con Air, like, that was a plane full of prisoners. Mm-hmm. There was no doubt that there would be prisoners on board.
Mm-hmm.
Just like in the New York City subway, there's never a doubt.
Yeah.
There will be patrons on board.
Loads of people all around all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was also thinking about how common heists, I mean, these days are, like, usually online, and it's getting scammed out of your savings or having your identity stolen or something, which is, like, devastating, but kind of, like, boringly mundane at the same time. Like, it's just someone sitting at a computer. Whereas when I think of a heist, it's always like the classic image of the guy with the blindfold, like shoving bags of money with dollar signs on it into a trap. So, yeah, this is like, I guess, maybe putting a pin in it for later, but just wondering also about like a throwback nostalgia that's maybe inherent in heist movies. Mm-hmm. Or even, not even necessarily in the specificity of it, but in the concept of it, maybe.
Yeah. Well, even back, like, I'm thinking immediately of Edwin S. Porter's Great Train Robbery from 1903 and how that sort of established the heist film, right? And the Western and sort of, yeah, everything sort of blossomed out of that. And that's, you know, we still use a lot of the beats that movie used.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, 1903, I don't know if you know this, but 1903 was quite a while ago. So.
Well, I was thinking that 2013 was just last year. So
you were
1903 seems like it could only have been, you know, what, 20 years ago?
Once again, time is a flat circle.
It is. Mm. Who can tell where we've been, where it's taking us? No one knows.
No one knows.
Impossible. All right. It's time.
Ooh.
It's time. Gird your loins. We're describing this movie in 4 keywords or less.
Okay.
What do you think? Give it to me.
Mustaches.
Yeah, nice.
Misogyny.
Yes, yeah.
Mathow.
Oh, she's going for alliteration, folks!
And germs.
Oh.
Sorry for the letdown.
Wow.
No, germs.
You should have said merms.
Merms. Germs are a huge part of this movie.
Just because everything is filthy?
I mean, yeah, the New York City subway is filthy, but also, like, a perp is collared because he just cannot
sneezes
cover his
all
mouth.
Over the place, yeah.
It's
mucus
gross.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. It's definitely a pre-COVID world.
Oh, it is. Yeah. I mean, even a post-COVID world, though. I have people sneezing all over me all the time. It's nuts. Yeah. I'm like, did we learn nothing?
We did learn nothing.
We did learn nothing.
Yeah.
In fact. Even New York City is just like the nastiest looking place. It's so grimy.
Like now or in the movie?
In the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, also in real life now. But like, especially then, I feel like movie versions of New York City now are like glowing. And like, ooh, it's metropolitan and so fun and hip and whatever. And this is like, this is a hellhole.
Yeah. Well, and I think in the 70s and 80s, everybody thought
it was
a hellhole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it got a rebrand.
A rebrand. Very successfully.
Yeah.
At least for everyone else in the world. Okay, so mine are trains.
Sure.
It's a gimme. Yeah.
Love
yeah.
it.
Walkie-talkies.
Oh.
So many walkie-talkies.
Yeah, that's true. And you got the hyphen in there, so it counts as one word.
It does.
Ooh. Slick.
Just slid right in there. Bureaucracy.
Oh, yes.
And Moida.
Moida, yes. I was very much hoping we would talk about Walter Matthau's accent.
Oh, we will be.
Great.
It will be often imitated to an irritating level.
Never duplicated.
Every day I miss him.
Oh, he's the best.
I wake up and I mourn his passing.
It's true.
He, yeah, was a prince among men. God, I hope he didn't do anything too terrible.
Ugh, I don't even want to know.
Yeah, let's leave the past in the past.
Yeah.
May I do a summary?
Please.
Excellent. Buckle up. Okay, so first of all, this movie has the snappiest score.
Oh, it does.
It's super great. And I just actually want to talk about it for a sec. So, I don't think the score fits the movie.
No.
Listen, okay. Yeah, because it's too cool, right?
It's very cool.
So the movie is
pretty peppy.
It's super peppy. It's super snazzy. It's super jazzy. And it feels like something to like, I don't know, saunter around and like be cool to. But the movie itself is about like corrupt politicians and like layers of impenetrable bureaucracy. Like, like it's not. They don't go.
They don't go.
It's not a sexy movie, but it is a very sexy score.
I agree.
So what is that? Is it just like the scores of the 70s? Like
it
or...
might be. Like I was.
It's like very Pink Panther-esque to me.
Yes.
I heard it and I was like, this feels Mancini.
Yeah. Which kind of makes me think like they weren't really caring about the plot or the story so much as they were caring about this is a movie in New York City in the 70s, and so it's going to be jazzy and cool, and who cares?
Even though everyone else looks like a schlumpy elbow?
Yeah, on purpose.
On purpose. Oh, that's right.
But I think even if they didn't mean to, they would look like
they looked like deadbeats before it was cool. I see.
They're covering up their slumpy elbow looks with more slumpy elbow looks.
With more slumpy elbow. Very fair. Very fair. If you can't fight it, lean into it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. As the movie opens, we see a gridlock of New York City traffic, and a thoroughly unremarkable dude gets out of a cab and goes down into the subway. While waiting for a train, he sneezes. This is the first of many sneezes.
Germs.
And his mustache falls off a little bit, which is a totally normal thing to do that could happen to anyone.
You sneeze so hard.
You sneeze so hard.
His mustache.
The follicles are loosened. As the train rolls up, he gets on, and then they go to another couple stops and pick up two more men who are dressed very similarly. And who are carrying equally suspicious elongated cardboard boxes. At the fourth stop, yet another guy waits for the train to pull in and then walks over to the motorman's car area, pulls a gun on him, and tells him that the train is being hijacked. And the motorman has the best response ever. Even with a gun in his face. So the dude is like holding a gun and he's like, I'm taking your train. And the motorman is like, you're taking my train? And this bafflement will be a theme throughout the movie, because mm-hmm. everyone who hears about the crime in progress is like, what?
Yeah.
What? 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 What do you mean? And then from out of the crowd on the train, the other three dudes come together, and this, it turns out, is our heist team. We've got our Mr. Green, who's sneezy. Mm-hmm. We've got Mr. Brown, who's forgettable. We've got Mr. Gray, who's a psycho, and also Hector Elizondo?
Yeah.
I always forget how to pronounce his last name. Elizondo. Yeah. Elizondo. Yeah. And Mr. Blue, who's the leader.
Who's Quint from Jaws.
Who's Quint from Jaws. And I didn't realize. Yeah, real name
also
Robert Shaw.
Robert Shaw.
Ah, yes. A man of many names, many faces. I didn't realize he died very soon after making this movie.
Very
he
soon.
He died very young.
Mm-hmm.
It was nuts. I thought that he was in, like, stuff in the 80s. But I then went back to IMDb and was like, oh,
yeah,
he did. He did not.
Yeah. I guess this was made the year before Jaws. Yes.
Was it?
74, Jaws was 75. Or just Jaws came out in 75.
Oh.
Yep.
Oh, all right. Now, don't fact check her. She knows.
I do know.
I do not, so I will not fact check you. We're cutting to a dozing Lieutenant Zachary Garber, our boy Walty Matz. Of the Transit Authority Police. He's a sleepy boy, but luckily his tie is awake enough for the both of them.
Oh, it's true.
It is a powerful tie with opinions of its own.
It's a 5-alarm tie.
Yeah. Garber gets woken up to tour some visiting dignitaries from the Tokyo Metropolitan Subway System around their New York City subway offices. And he assumes the men can't speak English, so he's doing the least information-wise. And also the most, racism-wise.
Yes.
Until they all get to the nerve center, or Neuve Center.
Neuve Center.
Neuve Center. Right as the train supervisor radios to say that one of the trains is behaving very strangely. Back on the train, the hijackers have unhooked one car from the rest and announced to everyone on that car that they are hostages. I'm like, this is so weird. Even after... like, waving around automatic guns and giving a terrifying speech about how everyone's gonna get shot. All the people in the car are, like, just very chill.
Yeah.
Especially at this point. Like, some people even laugh at them.
A lot of crazy shit goes down on subways.
Clearly.
So they're like, okay, what is
what,
it today?
What is it? Yeah, just another Tuesday.
I just gotta get home.
I don't know, man. I even see a gun and I'm gonna poop my pants. So, like, all respect to these people. Then Mr. Blue radios the Neuve Center to inform everyone what's up. He and his associates have taken a subway car hostage and have a list of demands. And everyone is like, stunned, right? Yeah. Like, no one knows how to deal because it has literally never occurred to anyone to steal an underground train that runs on a closed loop system. He's a genius. He's thought of something no one has ever. I said a list of demands, but really there's just one. The hijackers want $1 million to be delivered to them in an hour, or they'll kill everyone they have trapped on the car.
$1 million.
$1 million.
Said in my best Dr. Evil voice.
Which we'll also talk about that, because yes. That is a bonkers amount, like small amount of money.
Yeah.
Even at this point.
Yeah.
To be like, I'm going to literally hold 20 people, 18 people.
Yeah.
It's hostage. Very modest. I'm going to, like, stop up all subway traffic in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And all I will request is, like, $1 million. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. The, like,
to be split among four of us.
Four of us! So yeah. You're getting a measly 200... I mean, I wouldn't spit at it, but, like...
No, but I wouldn't kidnap a train full of people for it, either.
No. It's wild. Mm-hmm. So, the modesty of these men's ambition. Well, maybe not their ambition, but, like, the modesty of their demand is puzzling.
Yeah.
But still... Because the train master is super belligerent, so Mr. Blue's like, give us this money. And he tells Mr. Blue, keep dreaming, maniac. Which, last I checked, is not the recommended negotiation tactic for a situation like this.
No, I wouldn't assume
so. I don't think it is. A reluctant hero steps up in the form of Lieutenant Garber to take over talking to the hijackers. Word eventually gets to the New York City mayor, who was on death's door with a man flu. And we then get some incredibly dry comedy from his sickbed in his living room as he tries to figure out what to do in this situation. Either pay the $1 million or, you know, use force and try and take the car and risk getting all the hostages killed in the process. Eventually he does decide to pay the $1 million, but only because he thinks he'll be able to win back voters by doing it.
Specifically 18, according 18 to his
voters. Oh my god. I like the scenes with the mayor were like some are among my favorites in this entire movie. They're so silly. And just go to show how like everyone in this world is like incompetent and self-serving.
Mm-hmm.
And base, and, like the system is broken, like, at every level, basically. Yeah. Meanwhile, back in the subway tunnels, we're seeing some conflict develop between the team of hijackers. Mr. Blue only trusts Mr. Green, because, like, you know, no one remembers that Mr. Brown exists, and also Mr. Gray is a monster and a chaos agent.
Yeah.
And, like, at one point, Mr. Blue tells Mr. Green that Mr. Gray was thrown over to the mafia because he was too wild. And we're all like, okay, wow. What kind of shit do you have to do that the mafia is like, nah, cut him loose.
And they would just let him quit.
Yeah.
Fire him, like, instead of just murder him.
Be well, dude. Yeah. Like,
these guys have not seen The Sopranos.
Back at the control center, Garber gets the word that the mayor will be paying up the ransom, but they need more time to literally, like, do all the logistics to get it there. So, like, get the money, pack it up, according to Mr. Blue's very specific and weird requirements.
Yeah.
But I'm still not clear on why that... And then also drive it, like, clear across town.
Yeah.
Through very busy New York City streets. So he asks Mr. Blue for more time to deliver the goods. And Mr. Blue says, nope, no cigar. At this point, logistics keep sort of, like, unraveling. So there's like a whole army of cops parked on the street above the subway station. And then we get like a montage of like a room full of people, like literally like hand counting $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also a cop delegation waiting to drive the money in like a literal bag to the subway. And, you know, then there are different people at different points of the subway tunnels, like with sniper guns and like walkie-talkies, checking in with each other in the command center. It's a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
At multiple points, people are, like, talking to someone on a walkie-talkie, and then they'll, like, reach over and grab another walkie-talkie to relay different info into, and then it's, like, an intricate game of telephone where they can't use the same walkie-talkie, and it's not clear to me why. Anyways, it's more dramatic, I guess. If you can, like, use one walkie-talkie. It's like when you're shooting a gun and you run out of ammo and you're like, ah, get out of here. This is garbage now.
Useless.
So you use a walkie-talkie once on one channel and you're like, this was no good for anyone anymore.
Give me a new one.
Give me a new one. Because the system is so complex, even though things are moving, Garber, like, keeps asking for more time and Blue keeps saying no. But then Garber realizes that since Blue is underground, they have no way of knowing what is actually happening. So then Garber just lies and tells Blue the money has arrived just as the clock hits the hour, saving everyone in the car for now. But then when the cops go underground to deliver the bag of money to the hijackers, one of the, like, hidden cops along the tunnel starts shooting at the train car, seemingly for no reason. Mm-hmm. Just, like, out of nowhere. So the hijackers shoot back and then execute the poor train conductor baby.
Yeah.
Just not good.
Not good.
No, it's terrible. Very sad. Very sad. When things settle down, the cops finish delivering the money to the hijackers, who then load it up and do then another sneaky switcheroo, getting off the train and setting it to hurtle down the track, still full of passengers, but unoperated, bypassing some fail-safe thingamabob.
Very technical.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The most. Then hijackers switch out their mustaches, hats, glasses, and coats, and are about to go up to the surface. But then Mr. Gray is a bastard one time too many, so Mr. Blue shoots him. And then an undercover cop who was on the train the whole time shoots and kills Mr. Brown, who we have forgotten about again. Yeah. Mr. Green runs off, but Mr. Blue stays to finish off the cop. And then in sweeps our bucket-hatted, yellow-tied hero Garber, who has been, like, driving back and forth across New York City for a while now. He's finally figured out what's happened, so he shows up just in the nick of time to save the undercover cop. Caught good and proper, Mr. Blue electrocutes himself on the rail rather than being subjected to the American justice system. Yeah. later on, then, doing some good old-fashioned gumshoeing, Garber identifies the three dead hijackers, and then realizes that the fourth, the one who got away, must be a former motorman. So then he goes, you know, knocking on doors, splitting heads. Gently, he just taps. And eventually finds Mr. Green, who seems to check out fine at first. But then, just as Garber is walking out the door, Mr. Green sneezes.
Gross. Germs.
And is caught.
Yes.
Because we've all heard that old Chekhov saying, right? If a man sneezes in the opening scene, you bet your britches that sneeze will be his ruin.
That's exactly what Chekhov said.
That's exactly what Chekhov said in Chekhov's thesis. The end. The end.
Wonderful job.
Thank you. Thank you.
Terrific.
What do you want to talk about?
Well,
we have many things.
We have many things. Do you want to talk more about the city as character?
Oh, sure. Let's talk about the city as character.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of the whole bureaucracy thing, too. The mayor is ineffectual, and the reason for heisting the subway is that it's such a signature part of New York City. Like, that's... You never see a movie set in New York that doesn't feature the subway, right? You never, it's just such an integral part. And I think it's really important too, that the heist takes place underground in sort of those New York City's veins, essentially. Yeah. Like they're infiltrating the day-to-day way of life of everyone in New York City. And that's a hard thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think, too, we have to look at the 18 passengers who are stuck on the train, because they are sort of a swath of New York City demographics, right? Mm-hmm. There's sort of, like, one Latin lady, one mother, one sex worker, one pimp, one, you know, like kind of one of everyone.
One day drinker.
Yeah, yeah, it's wild.
Representation for us all.
Yeah, one lady doing mantras
That's right. Yeah. A white lady doing a mantra.
Yeah. Like, it just seems like, okay, this is a cross section of New York City represented on a subway car. Like, this is not just about stealing a subway car. This is about infiltrating New York City and sort of, yeah, from the bottom up.
Yeah. There is a way in which that the subway car passengers feel almost like allegorical, they are, you know, representative of others, and they're sort of like standing for groups of people. Mm-hmm. I really like that. I was also thinking about how the city, you said it like goes down, but then we also go upwards. Like, there's a strong sense in going to like the mayor's house that you're sort of like moving upwards even higher.
Yeah.
And even in his house, he's like in his bed, like on the second floor. And then he's got this staircase going down and he's dropping Kleenexes onto a plant. And so it's sort of like this trickle down thing happening.
Yeah. Well, at the same time, like, we see him, you know, physically high up, but his power is diminishing. Mm-hmm. Like, he's almost putting himself on a pedestal and then just sort of, he's sick. So he's physically unwell. His power is declining. Mm-hmm. Even his wife is cynical about his bid for
political
mayor.
Success. Yeah.
And then you also have these Japanese guys coming in and looking in New York City's subway and sort of implying that Tokyo's is way better.
Oh, not implying.
Yeah. Okay, saying straight up that Tokyo's is way better, and like they're kind of thinking New York City is quaint.
Yeah.
Whereas all the transit police are like talking about how great it is and how, you know,
they have a lot going on and clearly there's nothing. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, and these guys are just kind of having a great time laughing and joking. And the joke is on Walter Matthau.
Yes.
In many ways, but
yeah. I think that was part of my read this time was like, so the dignitaries are sort of like impassive and not reacting to a lot of what Walter Matthau's character is saying, which like the heathen takes to mean like, oh, you don't understand me.
Yeah.
But I think we can also see that as being them be just being like, oh, this isn't
deeply unimpressed.
Deeply unimpressed. Deeply yeah. unimpressed. And just being like, oh, yeah. What else have you got? Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Like, this is a dingy office. Everyone is bored. Nothing
Everyone
happens.
Everyone is bored and kind of dirty looking. Like, everything just looks gray.
Yeah. Except for Matthau's tie.
Which is very low, as discussed.
But
and
yeah.
will be discussed again.
Like, Matthau just sort of flippantly tells somebody to take them upstairs and one of the dignitaries is like, oh, we'll find our own way upstairs, thank you.
Yeah, like, oh no, we got it. Yeah, thank you.
We can do it. This isn't complicated. which just sort of reiterates that maybe this movie is sort of the opposite of a love letter to New York City. It's sort of a 1-2 punch.
Mm-hmm.
Just suggesting that it's not as great as it would like to think.
Yeah, no, but I think it also does kind of feel like a love letter. Like, this feels sort of like, in a lot of ways, how, like, I would feel about Winnipeg. Just sort of like a grudging, like, ugh, you know, it's shitty, but it's what we've got. That kind of, like, that grudging
And you're allowed
admiration.
To say it because you're a Winnipegger. Yeah. Yeah. I think I agree with that, but there's also this sort of,
it's not Nora Ephron's New
ignorance.
York City by any
chance. Oh no!
Like,
but there's also like the especially I think in the transit police and Matthau's character in particular seems to be completely unaware that there's any other place, let alone a place that might be run more efficiently. And the same with the mayor. The mayor is such a baby.
Yeah.
And doesn't seem to understand that he's in charge of a very major center and doesn't know what he's doing and has a man flu.
In particular, there's one point where, like, the mayor's trying to, like, fob off responsibility onto other people.
Yeah.
And the deputy mayor is like, no, Al, you're the mayor.
Yeah.
The buck stops with you. You gotta do it. And the mayor is just like, I mean, has one of the best reactions ever, but yeah. Swears a whole bunch. So
yeah. He's mad.
It's pretty great. Yeah, but like the people, even the people with responsibility don't want it.
Yeah. It's grudging. It's like, okay, I guess. But
if I have to this time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, it's not, yeah, it's not Nora Ephron's New York. It's a sort of New York in decline in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it feels sort of like, while not being post-apocalyptic, definitely has sort of like that post-apocalyptic vibe that I would ascribe to like many more recent films that are sort of like, yeah, post-civilization almost, while still being so deeply entrenched in bureaucracy and bureaucratic systems.
Yes. And I'm interested.
And maybe that's part of it, is like the dystopian like element of bureaucracy, in that it, oh, and this is the other thing, in that it, like, bureaucracy necessarily like pretends to connect but actually isolates.
Yes.
So all of these people are trapped in their tiny little offices, like often underground offices, literally never seeing daylight. I mean, even the above ground offices don't have windows.
Yeah.
So they're all sort of caught in their little loops, and we only see sort of how circuitous and like disconnected each of these loops are as the crisis gets broader. And like that thing with the walkie-talkies I was talking about. It's like, yeah, no, these like, there are groups of people that inherently are not talking to each other ever. And they need to figure out how to connect in order to solve this fucking thing.
Yeah, well, even the transit police are different from the regular NYPD, police. And they don't talk unless there's a problem.
Yeah.
And so they're at cross purposes, and meanwhile, yeah, the transit authority is also involved, and you're totally right. These people are building communication as things are going down. And I think what you just said made me think, too, of the transit authority. I think his name is Dolowitz, the guy who gets really mad.
Kaz Dolowitz.
Kaz Dolowitz, who is in one of those underground offices, who seems to have never seen the light of day.
Oh, no. He's so like an underground baby.
That he is very surprised that they now let dames work in the office. And there's one woman there who is very much holding the show together. But he's just
but
like,
she dropped her ring down the toilet, so this is proof.
Never have a dame in the office. Never and a dame. And it just kind of goes to show that his office is such an isolated world where everything runs the way he runs it. And if there's ever change, it's the end of the world. It's very much this sort of like white old man ecosystem of like, oh no, if anything changes, it directly affects me and I don't like it. So
I want to use Kaz to sort of springboard into talking about capitalism and jobs and money and things.
Yes, very good.
Because he is an excellent example. Like, he's sort of always like the butt of the joke. So like we first see him ushering in a plumber through an unlocked gate. And the plumber comments, like, oh, shouldn't that be locked? And Kaz is like, what? It's like, someone's going to steal a subway car or whatever? And then immediately we cut to, like, the subway car being hijacked.
Yeah.
And then later on, when he starts to realize what's going on, he gets really angry because, like, you know, he's, like, super obsessed with work. So he goes... He makes it his mission to go and confront the hijackers, and in doing so, passes the motorman who's been, like, allowed to go and, like, escort the people in the other cars back to the station, the nearest station, and as they're sort of, like, passing each other, Kaz insults the motorman by saying, like, oh, you should have, like, you know, you're, like, the captain of, you should have gone down with the ship.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the fuck are you saying?
No thanks.
This man is probably paid very little.
Very little, yeah.
And it's not worth his life, let alone, you know, whatever else.
Yeah.
Maiming and dismemberment. But then, again, that sort of, like, turned back on him because Kaz is the one who ends up, like, dying as the result of, like, he's the one who goes down with the ship.
Yeah. And so does the trainee. Who's kind of brought up in that mentality that you go down with the ship. Like, he's new.
Yeah. He's the newbie who's wanting to work his way up the system. He's, like, just being trained as a conductor, but he's already thinking about being a motorman and, like, you know, climbing the ladder that way.
So, yeah, that whole idea of going down with the ship is so baked in.
Yeah.
Even though it's so ridiculous.
Yeah, like, just taking, like, a single step away from that. Yeah.
Don't die for your jobs, folks.
Like, literally don't die for your jobs. Nothing is worth that. But also, like, especially, like, nothing, like, something as like, mundane and, you know, like, humdrum as like, driving a car or driving a train. Like, yeah, it's important work, but it's not, like, life or death work. Mm. Ever.
Ever. Yeah. Even if you not being there is inconvenient for someone.
Right. Yeah, so then it made me think about the way that this whole movie approaches work, mm-hmm. and valuing life, and how money sort of, like, comes to play in that too. Because, I don't know, again, just the way that, like, these bureaucratic systems are set up to sort of siphon each other off, everyone seems sort of, like, bored or lifeless or, you know, like, listless at the beginning. But then when a crime happens, there's sort of, like, this enlivening that happens.
Yeah.
And so that is also odd to watch, that, like, literally something going wrong in this system sort of, like, creates energy and community, even if it's not, like, a good thing that's, like, clogging up the system. It's still something that's sort of, like, breaking people out of patterns.
Yeah, which is kind of akin to His Girl Friday, right?
It's go, like, on.
Well, just, like, all of a sudden something big happens and it breaks people out of their patterns, even if they're putting them back in old patterns.
Right.
It's changing. It's a little change 'em up.
Yeah.
I have nothing more to say about that. That's just what it reminded me of.
You just wanted to mention His Girl Friday.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. Always.
I love it. But,
oh,
yeah,
best movie.
I think that's such a good point. And I think, yeah, the bureaucracy kind of extends into the ways in which people groups are treated. Like, I'm thinking, of course, of Dolowitz and his misogyny. I'm also thinking of Walter Matthau's character, whose name is Zach.
Mm-hmm.
I keep forgetting that. Keeps being very concerned as to the gender of the undercover cop. For some weird reason, he's just obsessed with it. He mentions it at least twice, maybe three times.
It comes up a whole bunch. It's like regularly a conversation.
Because
everyone's
like,
it's a he. And then, he does not seem like, you know, a gender champion in the slightest. But for some reason, Garber is like, could be a she.
Yeah, but then he also says, what chance has one lousy cop got, especially if it's a dame?
Right.
Like, there's this sort of like, oh, progress. Like, he's above ground. He's, you know, he's recognizing that more than one gender.
He just
can
did
hold
some racial
job.
Slurs like 3 seconds ago, but, you know.
But then it's like, oh, well, a normal man cop will have a hard time, but if it's a lady cop, well, she's probably already dead. Like, that's the attitude, and it's just like, is this progress? Is it not? And then, yeah, with the racism, it's like, oh, not. But then I was also noticing that the conductor, training the new conductor, is a black man who gets off the train before it's heisted, which is not something that usually gets to happen.
Mm.
And the prisoner the hostage that's shot is not a person of color, which also doesn't usually happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the woman in Dolowitz's office, a black woman, clearly smarter than her, like, the and the only, so the N-word is used on the train by Gray, who's the one everyone hates.
Yeah.
So it's almost like.
And then there's an immediate sort of, like, solidarity. Like,
yes.
the Jewish coded old man is like, oh, this is, like, a terrible thing.
Yeah.
And, like, everyone's immediately like, whoa, not cool, dude.
Yeah. So it's like, I'm really fascinated by what this movie is doing with marginalized groups, because it's almost trying to push a progressive agenda while also having characters that are not quite there, which is maybe more of a snapshot of real life.
Oh, don't say that.
No, but like, but the, you know, like there are people who think they're more progressive than they are, and there are, you know, you can be progressive on one thing, but totally regressive on another issue, and I don't know. I'm just fascinated that it wasn't just, you know, the black guy dies first, and, you know, there are no women of color, and if there are, they're, you know, overly sexualized, and like, it's not like that. Which is very weird. I mean, it's interesting that a movie in the 70s would have people of color at all. Mm-hmm. But also interesting that they
would. And a load of them in, like, authority positions.
Exactly. They're not just scapegoats.
Like, there is that weird moment with, like, the Inspector Daniels, who is, like, been calling the shots all this time, and then, I mean, we can talk about that in a bit, but then, like, but Garber, like, sort of comes up and is, like, immediately, like, clearly expecting him to be white. And has, like, a, like, sort of, like, has to, like, correct himself in the moment. And is like, oh, I thought you would be shorter or something. Yeah. Like, it's like, okay.
So the movie seems very self-conscious.
Yeah.
Of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And of maybe, like, it's not often that you would paint your hero as somebody who is lovable, but also deeply flawed. In that kind of way, when it comes to things like gender and race and those issues that a lot of movies just try to avoid.
I definitely see your point. I think that my instinct in seeing stuff like this usually is to default to, like, the Quentin Tarantino example, where like he has people like throwing around the N-word all the time, like that sort of like really dramatic, overinflated racism that is sort of like part of the performance, even though it's like also acknowledged that that's not cool. Like, I don't think it's to that level.
No.
But, I don't know, that's always kind of in the back of my mind when something like this is happening, where it's like, we're trying to have it both ways, I guess, is the thing.
Yeah. And I mean, I think with Tarantino, it tends to be a lot more tokenized. Like, I think in this movie, what surprised me is that it doesn't feel tokenized. Like, anybody could have been those characters, and they just happen to be actors of color, and that's great. But there is that in a few scenes, there's that overtone of racism or sexism that goes on. But I do think it's noteworthy that that everybody rallies around that one character who's attacked with the N-word, and that it's the
butt of a gun.
And the butt of a gun, and it's the perpetrator is the guy that even the mob kicked out.
Yeah,
like he's the lowest of the low, right? It's not like
he is the literal worst.
Yeah. And everybody's like, no, hey, that's not okay. Like I don't think that was an accident.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I don't think the movie is, you know, some sort of woke masterpiece. I'm just mostly just curious about
It is quite surprising.
Yeah, like what was it like writing that script? Like what was the thought process?
Well, and this is based on a novel, so I'm also or a short story, I can't remember. Novel. But like an original text. So I'm also very curious what that had and what kind of revisions happened to like even update it into a movie. Very curious. Very curious. Could you keep track of, sorry, switching gears for a sec, could you keep track of the different titles, the job titles?
The job titles.
For, like, everyone in the train system, basically.
Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah, okay, good.
No, I was just like, that guy drives a train. That guy's in charge of where the train goes.
That guy
that's
talks into a microphone sometimes.
Talks into a microphone sometimes. Yeah, I don't know anything about the business of trains.
I guess this is just a coda to our earlier conversation about, like capitalism and jobs and stuff. Mm-hmm. But, like, yeah, even just how there doesn't seem to be a... And this could be just, like, our collective ignorance about train systems. But, could like, be. How they all seem to have the same job title, but, like, it was unclear sort of, like, where one person's role ended and another began. It sort of all muddled together.
Yeah, well, I was even struck, like... So the police in this movie are uniformed police.
Yeah.
But then when...
But there's also undercover cops.
There's also undercover cops. But then when Matthau and Jerry Stiller go to hunt out Mr. Green, mm-hmm. Jerry Stiller's uniformed, but he's a transit cop. So it's just like...
That's right.
Oh, so they're not NYPD, but they look like NYPD and they have the same authority... But they're separate.
And do they carry guns?
I don't know. I mean, I assume so. But
because no, but what America, specifically but... does Walter Matthau carry a gun?
I don't think he ever draws a gun.
Yeah.
But that's not to say he wouldn't carry one. But, I mean, yeah.
But particularly in contrast to the other cops who are like...
Gun happy.
Gun happy. Literally just like shooting for no reason.
Which is also the difference between, or another difference between the transit cops and the regular city cops is that the city cops are super bumbling.
Mm-hmm.
And the transit cops are just bored.
Yeah.
But they're the ones who end up solving everything. Right? Like without Matthau, there's no solution.
Yeah. There's sort of like, not necessarily an adversarial, but definitely a contrasting relationship between like, the city cops and the transit cops.
Yeah.
Where I was thinking about, like, Matthau is almost like this gentleman detective.
Yeah.
Where he's, like, very calm most of the time. Like, to the point where he almost seems bored most of the time.
Except even when he tells somebody to shut up.
Yeah, there's one point in particular that he, like, breaks his cool.
Yeah.
But at all other times, he is, like, very, very calm, and that level sort of, like, is what enables him to sort of, like, match the energies of Mr. Blue,
mm-hmm.
who is also very calm.
Yeah.
For, like, such an intense movie. Like, this movie's effect on me is very intense. Like, I feel mm-hmm. like it's very propulsive. But with the exception of Mr. Gray, like, and the, like, bumbling cops who are sort of, like, peripheral, most people are, like, very chill.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird, but I also feel like Blue's chill energy is a lot different from Matthau's chill energy. Like, Matthau almost has, like, a laziness to his energy,
mm-hmm.
whereas Blue's energy just seems to be, like, I've done my time, now
it's like purposeful,
now they serve me.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, which is
and
odd
there's
because
a very
he's a mercenary.
Strong menace to it. Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
Yeah. Whereas Matthau's like, all right, I guess I'll go solve this crime.
Oh, man, I would watch the heck out of a crime TV show. If he had, like, a Columbo-type, like...
1,000%.
Come on.
Oh.
Big time.
Come back from the dead, Matthau.
Come back
from
the dead. Please.
Please.
Yeah. And particularly thinking about this movie in contrast to, I haven't seen the remake.
No, I haven't.
But I just watched the trailer. And it is, like, so jarringly cut. And there's, like, explosions all over the place. And immediately, like, everyone's shouting all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so even just, like, the difference in energy level. Like, it's the same story. Yeah. It is the exact same characters. And yet, like... the energy is so much more heightened.
It's Travoltized.
It's Travoltized and Denzelized.
And Denzelized. But
so it's, yeah, those two big guys, like, really, you know, going at it in comparison to Walter Matthau and Martin, who are, like, almost whispering to each other.
Yeah. Well, and I think Shaw really takes his role as this sort of, like, like, he is a criminal mastermind, but he's not asking for much, right? Like, everything's been planned out to the letter. He's been the one in charge of everything. Mm-hmm. He tells them when to do what, but...
And he has, like, little lists of things. Mm-hmm. So it's not even, like, they're complicated instructions, but he still has, like, these very detailed lists to, like, relay it.
He's impeccably organized. He sticks to his guns. Mm-hmm. He, you know, doesn't give any slack except once when he gives an extra 10 minutes for them to get the money actually to the train.
Right, when they're at the subway and have to walk it in. Yeah.
And yet, like, everything he does is so methodical. Up and, like, even to when he puts his foot on the third rail. Mm-hmm. Like, even his death is very, he's like, okay then. Like, and the way, like, the camera sort of pans up to show us his electrocution.
Yeah.
And his face is just, like, pretty normal. Like, there's smoke. Kind of, like, yeah, but
he's grimacing, but it also is just like,
yeah. It's not like, you know, it's not grotesque, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, it just looks like, yep, this would be how he dies. Like, he's in full control. All he has to do is move his foot 2 inches.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, flops over. Like, it's, everything is so neat and tidy. Whereas, I mean, I haven't seen the remake either, but nothing Travolta does is neat and tidy. It's all chaos.
All chaos all the time.
So I'm really interested to see what that would be like.
Yeah. Can you maybe speak to, like, codes of masculinity in the 70s and how this would... No. I mean... As a gender historian, just in thinking about, like, how there are, like, you know, specific eras of masculinity and they've obviously changed so much even in the last 100 years. Like, each 10 years, it seems like there's been a sort of a different code.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering also if this, like, Walter Matthau calmness is sort of more in line with sort of, like, a respected display of masculinity in a way that, like, you know, some, like, a character like Mr. Gray, it's sort of, like, unseemly almost. Mm-hmm. Like, there's sort of, like, a distastefulness to it.
Yeah.
Where it's not just, like, oh, he's a bad person. It's like, oh, he's, like, he's going too far, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of, like, anti-respectability almost.
Yeah. So I think... Certainly a trend that I see in 1970s masculinity is sort of degrees of swagger.
Yeah.
So, okay. like, I think Matthau's character has a ton of swagger, confident swagger. And Gray's character also has swagger, but it's this sort of smarmy swagger. Mm-hmm. And Blue has swagger, but it's very buttoned up, military grade. Like, he was a mercenary. He knows how not only the British Army works, but other armies that he was paid to work for until they stopped paying him.
Yeah.
Like, I think his swagger is more dependent on pride.
Right.
Than anything else. But I think, the most succinct way I can put it is that 1970s masculinity was all about degrees of swagger.
Nice. Yeah. Okay.
And fair. Just how in control of a situation they would be.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really interesting then about the undercover cop who seems to have no control whatsoever.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of the main characters, I think that's what we see. And I think one of the reasons we see Green as a pathetic figure is because he can't even control his sneezes.
Yeah.
Like, this guy has no swagger whatsoever.
Oh, yeah.
He used to be a motorman. He needs to be taught how to run the train. Like, he's not good at all the stuff he's supposed to be good at.
Yeah.
His body betrays him.
Yeah, so, he can't even control, like...
Much like the mayor.
That's right.
Yeah. Man,
everyone's sick in this movie.
Yeah.
Dang.
But I see Robert Shaw's character as this military, disciplined, Guy and Matthau's character as perhaps overly confident, but in a gentle way, or in a yeah. sort of chill way.
Yeah, because even their final showdown, like blink and you miss it.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's so quick.
Like, everyone else has been shot by each other or is sort of out of the picture at this point. And in walks Garber and is basically like, oh, you're the head guy.
Yeah.
Come with me, I guess. And then And then Blue is like, maybe not though. And then he just like kills himself and then that's it.
The pacing of this movie is very odd. Yeah. Because it seems to give equal shrift to every single thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we get so many shots of like the passengers just being like, oh no. And nobody's really doing anything. And there's a lot of waiting going on and a lot of sort of tiny scenes that don't really matter. But yeah, at the climax of the movie is just...
Our final showdown is like...
Over in an instant. And there's no build up for it, really.
No.
At all. And there's no... There's not even a denouement, because even when Matthau catches Green, the final shot is him just opening the door and being like, like, that. I recognize that sneeze, but, like, he doesn't say anything. It's just a look and then credits.
Yeah.
Like, it's so wild.
We get more time spent on watching a room full of people count money.
Yes.
And we also get a snappier score.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's very peppy and upbeat as they're like, do, 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 do. As opposed to, like, yeah. The and things that should be the most important.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's poor in terms editing of narrative arc. Or if it's just trying to say something. Like, I always want to give them the benefit of the doubt to be like, is it art? Or is it just bad editing? But yeah, it's hard to say because you're totally right. They give way more time to very mundane things.
I feel like that also contributed to my sort of like masculinity question, because usually in these sorts of movies where there's sort of like the buildup of the clash between the hero and the anti-hero, and you know, like finally they have it out and one of them walks away,
mm-hmm.
and it's sort of like, you know, this like clash of the titans of, you know, light every time.
Mm-hmm.
And their showdown sort of feels like just a continuation of the way that they've been living.
Yeah.
That has already been so subdued, like, sort of comparatively speaking.
Yeah.
And so then, like, they don't have that kind of bluster that we normally associate mm-hmm. with sort of, like, a spectacular showdown.
Yeah.
They
talk to each other quite normally throughout.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost quite respectful. You could see them maybe being friends in a different situation.
In a different life. Yeah. We're not so different, you and I. I
mean, they're very different, but maybe not.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. It's my philosophical take.
I do also think that spending more time on sort of cataloging all of these complicated systems and creating more intensity around something as simple as like counting a bunch of money, or, you know, trying to drive through crowded New York City streets and, like, you know, get 30 blocks away in, you know, 2 minutes when there's like a delivery truck in your way or something. Mm-hmm. Like, there is so much tension built into those sorts of mundane things.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, the sort of like final action scene also feels anticlimactic in comparison to those bits.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like to the point where it's almost a letdown. Like, oh, there's no...
Oh, you think?
Well, maybe a letdown is too harsh, but it's just... Yeah, with all of those sort of like, are they going to make it? Oh no, there's a cyclist in the way. And then like he just puts his foot on the rail, or like
mm-hmm.
Green just sneezes. It's like, oh, all right. I guess feel it's over.
Like, also, though, it's focusing on, like, to come back to what I've been talking about, I think, the last episode, where the heist movie feels like a detective story that you're sort of, like, solving as it happens.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also thinking that in this case, by the time the final showdown happens, like, the mystery has been solved, basically.
Yeah.
So that actually also positions sort of, like, the central conflict as the problem itself, rather than the final confrontation. Well, like, once they meet each other, it's already been figured out.
Yeah, and I guess there is only, like, jail or death, right? Which is kind of a typical choice in stories.
Mm-hmm.
But I think even with Green, right, like, they get the wrong guy. There's a funny moment where a guy with one leg opens the door and they're like, okay, bye.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they're in with Green. Green is just a weirdo. They leave and he sneezes and then...
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's just like, oh. There's no... Like, the chase has already happened,
mm-hmm.
and this is almost a coda. Like,
it feels like a coda.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, and by the way, Green gets caught.
Yeah. Don't worry.
Yeah. We don't see Green, like, in a bar drinking, you know? He's not the Garland Green of this movie.
He is not the Garland Green of this movie.
No one is.
He does have a moment where he's laying on his grubby bed in his grubby jammies,
mm-hmm.
Holding money that's stained with blood.
Yeah.
And sort of tossing it in the Scrooge air with McDuck-ing glee. Yeah. But even then, it's sort of like such small potatoes because he doesn't even have enough of the, like, money packets to, like, cover his body.
Yeah.
He's sort of, like, tossing two or three sort
and
of, like...
awkwardly, like, rolling around on them.
Yeah. So even that is sort of, like, pathetic or telling, I guess.
Well, and, like, while he's hiding the money, when they're at the door, he's like, just a second. And then he was like, I'm in the bathroom or something. Like, just all of this sort of, like, he has no pride. None at all. And Matt, I was like, I hope he washed his hands.
Like, we know he didn't.
But I mean,
he hasn't washed his hands since 1943.
Yeah, just there's no sense of criminal mastermind with Mr. Green. He's just like, woo, I have money. Oh, darn it.
Darn it.
I sneezed.
Betrayed by my own sneeze.
Yeah. It's like, you should have just stayed home, man.
No. Should have stayed home. You're sick anyways.
Yeah.
Do you have anything more you want to cover before we go into Theme Corner, or shall we talk about how this fits into the heist category?
Let's talk about Theme Corner.
Okay. Theme Corner. Now that we have seen this movie,
mm-hmm.
And considered it as part of a heist collective,
mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts? How does this fit into heistness, first of all?
Mm-hmm.
And are there connections you want to draw with On Air?
Mm.
Are there connections you want to draw with heist movies in general? Or are there, you know, ways in which you want to refine our definition of heist?
Well, I think this is a very traditional heist movie in a lot of ways. They are definitely trying to heist something that is, quote unquote, impossible.
The impossible job. Steal,
the impossible job. But also slightly absurd.
Yes.
Because,
very silly.
Like, it's not like, oh, damn, they did it. But it's like,
who would even think? Yeah.
And, like, what? Only $1 million? Like, it's funny. I do think it's interesting, the makeup of the heister is interesting, or the heist group, mm-hmm. because they don't know each other.
Yeah, they get each other's names, like, they have to check with each other.
Yeah.
One of them's like, oh, you're green?
Yeah, and they definitely don't trust each other.
No.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, Brown, like, we always forget Brown is there.
Yeah.
But they come from very different backgrounds, like, Gray is... been kicked out of the mob, and Green has been fired for drug dealing or something.
Yeah, he was like a motorman who had, like, trafficked drugs or something.
Yeah, yeah. Something like that. And then Blue lost.
He was in the military and then was a mercenary, and then
he was getting $5,000 a month, and then all of a sudden,
and then, like, you know, the genocide business dried up. And
yeah. So what's a guy to do?
What's a guy to do? Guess I'll take a train.
And yeah, for a quarter of a mil.
But I honestly can't remember what Brown did.
No, I don't think it was even mentioned.
Do we even talk? Well, no, they go through the cards at the end. They're like, oh, so-and-so did this, so-and-so did this.
He was just like a petty criminal, I think.
Oh, okay. You know, even that's unremarkable.
Yeah, very unremarkable. And he's Brown. Like, yeah, they might as well have called him Mr. Beige.
Oh, for real. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like all of these guys are sort of entitled. They're mad at their circumstances. They just want what's theirs or what's coming to them.
Yeah, they all have a chip on their shoulder. They're sort of like basement boys with a grudge, essentially.
And it is not a well-oiled machine.
No.
Like, if I think of Cyrus the Virus and his sense of control.
Oh, runs like clockwork.
Yeah, like, this was very much like, Blue is kind of the Cyrus of the group, but he doesn't have the control.
No.
Like, everybody is just sort of winging it, in a way. Yeah, so...
And you sort of see the disintegrate, like, the cracks in the group immediately, and then it sort of just keeps devolving.
Yeah, so it's not slick by any means. And the man on the outside isn't a socks and sandals guy, so...
Ugh, I love that socks and sandals outfit, man. It is, I think, one of John Cusack's best.
Yeah.
I really adore it. It's going to be my look of the summer.
I hope so.
Yes, just you want.
One other thing I noticed is that, I mean, with the prisoners too, they more know of each other in Con Air than know each other. Some of them know each other. But we still, in this one, in Pelham, we get the sense that, like, when Gray dies, they're just like, oh, well, and take his share of the money. And when Brown dies, they're like, get his money.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's like, okay, more for me, that's fine. Which I think is, maybe I'm thinking too much of something like Ocean's 11, where everybody is...
Best friends
and an equal part, and there's so much respect. And the heist couldn't work if they didn't know each other really well.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's just never going to work.
Yeah.
Because they can't trust each other.
And that's really a good life lesson, you know?
I think so.
You know, don't try and pull off a heist if you're not with your besties.
It's true.
Because look at Danny, look at the difference in results. Danny Ocean walking away, laughing with his cool millions.
Yep.
This dude, well, clear to dying win, and getting like $250,000.
Yeah.
And still dying for it.
Yeah.
Boo.
Yeah. But it does follow the sort of like, we're going to steal this train. Mm-hmm. No, it's impossible. Oh, they stole the train.
Oh, they did it.
Yeah, yeah.
For a bit, at least.
Yeah, and with the negotiations and the hostages, like, it's just very traditional.
Yeah, yeah. And also a lot of the same sort of concerns, like, a discomfort with capitalism, but also sort of, like, a desire to sort of one-up it.
Yeah.
So we still have people who are, like, there's going to be something written about, probably already has, but like about sort of this like weird middle class tension in heist movies, where so often people are like, oh, we're going to die. Ah, yeah, but it's better than like working in an office. and like that happened in Con Air. Yeah, that happened here too.
It's true.
So there's sort of this like, you know, like at least we're like, you know, risking it all for, you know, one big moment or one big score, you know, better than those losers who are just working 9 to 5.
Yeah, there's an ideal involved, or like some
and also sort of like a disgust at sort of like the complicity in other people who are sort of like cogs in the system.
Yeah,
like, oh, you haven't figured it out, or you're not like, you know, brave enough or like clever enough to think your way out of it.
Yeah.
You're sort of just going along with the crowd like everyone else. And then also thinking about how, like, the role of undercover or the man on the inside.
Yeah.
And here too, there's like that undercover cop, and it's like, man, woman, who is it?
No way to know.
And it that sort of is like as close to a red herring as it can be, because mm-hmm. it's like for the longest time they don't do anything, and then, you know, at the final moment they like do like get off the train and follow people and shoot Mr. Brown, but like are sort of like also immediately taken out of the equation.
Yeah.
So they do sort of like there's the most build up for the least payoff.
Yeah. It's interesting to me because I think last week we talked about how there's sort of a distinction in earlier heist movies where they really favor the cops mm-hmm. and later heist movies where we side more with
the criminals. Heroes. Yeah.
But here it's like you side with the transit cops. But not the other
No one
cops.
Has ever said. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, we clearly, like, Mathau is clearly going to win. And we don't feel bad for any of the criminals. Mm-mm. Right? Like, they're very sort of one-dimensional in a lot yeah. of ways. And so's everybody else. But we're rooting for the
And are,
cops.
Like, gross old men.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing redeeming.
There's really. Nothing sexy about them. There's nothing, mm-mm. like, appealing about any of
no.
them.
No.
They're either boring or super creeps.
Yeah. Which, I mean, so is everybody at the transit authority and even the transit cops. But,
you're not wrong.
But we root for Mathau. And I think for
it's
more
that
reasons
yellow tie.
Than just that we love Mathau. Yeah. It's like, oh, he's clearly the good guy.
Yeah.
Even though he's racist and sexist. Grumpy. But yeah, it's so it kind of really holds tight to that there are clear good guys and clear bad guys. Mm-hmm. But it's not the traditional cops that you're rooting for.
Right.
Yeah.
So it is pro cop, just not the cop you're thinking.
Yeah, different cops. Who may or may not be the same kind of cops, but
yeah. Yeah. A very fine distinction, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Hair's breadth distinction.
Hair's breadth.
Yeah. Shall we move on to moments of joy?
Yes, please.
What were your moments of joy?
Okay. I have a few.
Okay.
So at one point, a woman asks to get off the train because she has an important appointment. And Blue says no, and she just goes, oh, shit. And I thought that was funny. I liked it when the Japanese businessmen were like, we'll find our own way upstairs.
Yeah.
I liked that Mathau had a torn box of aspirin on his desk, just, you know, just grabbing him by the handfuls.
I didn't clock that.
But one of my favorite things, and it's just very, it just puts a nice bow on the relationship between the cops and on Mathau's take on gender, is at the end when the plainclothes cop who is dressed like a hippie is lying down, passed out or whatever, Mathau comes over and like taps him on the head and calls him miss and just like walks away.
He specifically says, okay, so this is yeah. also my okay, moment of okay, joy because I thought it was like for all of the like
kiss.
The yeah all of the like lead up and all the back and forth that they've had this entire movie, it was like the perfect comedic payoff.
Mm-hmm.
So he leans down and he pats her head. So Mr. Blue has just electrocuted himself
mm-hmm.
and everyone else is dead and the plainclothes cop is passed out on the rails. And Mathau leans over and pats him on the head and says, we'll have an ambulance in no time, miss. Everything's going to be okay.
That's right. And this is the same, like, hippie cop who, once the bad guys are off the train, then he leaps up.
Then he has his moment of glory.
Jumps off the train and is like, I'm a cop! And, like, runs out of the train. And then, yeah, Mathau's like, it's okay, miss. Don't worry.
He's very brave in a dark tunnel.
Yeah,
where
exactly.
he can't be spotted.
Where
yeah.
the bad guys have already left.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very brave.
Very brave after the fact.
Yes.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, no, I was like, oh, this is like, this is the comedic gold I live
oh,
for.
Oh, so perfect.
I have like a couple like favorite moments with the mayor in particular.
Oh, yes.
One being like the first moment we see the mayor, he's like in bed complaining about being like the second most important elected position in the U.S. and still has to suffer like a schlub. And the nurse who's attending him leans over and says, "I'm sorry you have the flu, Mr. Mayor."
Yes.
And just her line delivery was savage. Like, again, like, oh, yeah. Brutal.
Ugh.
Brutal. And then later on, when the deputy mayor comes to him and is like, "Okay, what do you think we're going to do?" And the mayor's like, "I've thought it through. We'll just give them the train. We've got plenty of them. We won't even miss it." And he's so serious.
He's like, "Huh? Is that a minute?"
He's like, "I've cracked it. I've cracked the code." He's like, "No, you dumb idiot."
That's so good.
And then I think also just the final scene when Garber and Rico are in Mr. Green's apartment, and it's like a dumpy ass apartment.
Oh, it's gross.
Is gross.
Yeah, it's very gross.
And Garber just is walking around and he's like, "Oh, it's a nice place you have here." I just like the idea that, yeah, he's just walking around complimenting apartments and not actually taking them in, just being like, "Oh, well whatever." Anyway, that was great. Oh, and also, the mayor's sick in bed, and he's watching the Newlywed Game.
Oh, yeah.
Which I recently seen the holdover. So, like, did the Newlywed Game just, like, have everyone in a chokehold in the 70s?
I guess so.
Like, what?
There were a finite number of channels, I guess. So.
It's like one of two, so everyone was just like, this is it.
This or the news.
Yeah. So. Oh, my God. Amazing. All right, movie connections. Any movie connections you want to mention?
Well, obviously Austin Powers.
Oh.
For the $1 million.
Obviously.
Bullet Train, because it's a heist on a train.
Oh, yeah.
And the disguises are so funny.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately I thought of Mission Impossible with the masks. Just like, yes. how it's like, these are fooling everyone.
It's like, you went from an unremarkable white man to another unremarkable white man.
Yeah, like you put on a mustache. It's like Clark Kent putting on glasses.
Glasses. I mean, literally, they put on glasses and take them off.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, yeah, those are the things that popped up immediately. What about you?
Yeah, well, I was also thinking about train movies, but in particular, they all seem to have different vibes because, like, usually when there's, like, I mean, usually the train is moving. And that sort of lends a sort of propulsiveness to the action.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, not only is something happening on the train, but you're also going somewhere else. And this is, like, the train doesn't move. And, in fact, it often, like, is moved backwards. Or,
yeah,
like, you know, sort
yeah.
of, like, there's, like, a haltedness or, like, a stuntedness to the action here.
Mm-hmm.
That I think we've been talking about throughout. There's sort of just, like, it's a very low-key movie, but even in, like, the scene, it's sort of stagnant,
mm-hmm.
or held in suspension.
Yeah.
So, yeah, then I was thinking about, like, okay, like, what are sort of, like, more, like, movies that are, like, more locked room movies, or sort of, like, theatrical movies that are sort of, like, one or two scenes, where you feel sort of, like, a sense of trappedness.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing this long build-up because I actually wasn't able to think of anything in particular.
I immediately just thought of Panic Room. Or Speed.
Speed! Yes.
Because at one point the train is, like, it's about inertia, so it's stopped,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden it can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no in-between.
Yeah. I mean, I have also recently seen Identity. Have you seen it recently?
Not recently.
It's the
Is that John Cusack?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I haven't seen it since it was in the theater.
It's very fun. And it's sort of like a claustrophobic, like, little mystery where people are sort of trapped in this hotel and mysterious things keep happening. And they keep trying to leave and they sort of, like, are redirected back to it.
Mm-hmm.
So something like that, where it's sort of like you're held in this little world and you're sort of trapped in these little spaces that, like, you just sort of have to stay in until the action itself is done.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, there's sort of no leaving sort of midway through is what I'm trying to say.
Okay, yeah.
So, Stay tuned for next time when I'll have thought of more that are actually related to that. It's a nice idea. Just don't have anything to ground it to right now.
That's okay.
One day. One day. All right. In summation, what did we learn? Juiciest bits, juiciest butt.
I learned not to go to work with a cold. That's what I learned.
Oh my God. I mean, it's what we knew all along, though.
Yeah.
Just and also, like, stay in bed.
Yeah. Kleenex, folks.
Kleenex. Face masks.
Soap.
Face masks.
Yeah.
Clean your hands once or twice a day.
At least.
Not a year.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I would also say stay at home when you're sick. Drink lots of fluids. Wear more colors than brown and gray.
Yeah.
Because, you know, once again, Walter Matthau's yellow tie. The bright point in this entire, like, pea soup of a film.
Yes, it is a pea soup of a film.
Yeah. Lots of grayish happening. Lots of grayish.
Yeah.
Whether that's, like, from grime, like city grime, or just, like, actual clothing, unclear.
Matthau is the piece of ham in the pea soup.
Boy, is he. Oh, what a ham. A delicious ham. Yeah, so yellow ties. Dress to impress.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Thank you. All right.
Who has the juiciest butt?
Now, I know you're going to say something silly like the train.
I will not.
And you'll be like, that train man, juiciest butt. Or like, New York City has the juiciest butt.
I was going to choose Walter Matthau.
Were you now?
Yes.
Were you now?
All along.
We don't see his butt.
This is a buttless
movie.
I'm assuming that he has.
But it has to be in there somewhere.
Yeah.
At the very least. He sits down.
Yeah.
He's got to sit on something.
It gets a good workout. It's, yeah.
It does?
Well, just from sitting.
Oh. Something that no one has said ever.
Do you mean to tell me that sitting
does not regularly exercise your butt?
Huh. Well, that explains a lot.
Yeah, well, there you go. who do I think has the best butt? I think... Again, it's so tricky because everyone looks like a pudding. You know what? I'm going to give that nice lady who lost her wedding ring.
Oh, yeah.
She's working hard for the money.
Yeah.
I think she deserves to have the nicest butt award
here. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. I
even though it's entirely theoretical, we never see it. Mm-hmm. We never even see her stand up, I don't think. But
no.
Going off of your theory.
Yeah.
She's sitting the entire time. She's got to have a banging badon.
Yeah, that's true. Also the mayor's wife.
Just for her sheer common sense.
Just for her sheer common sense, which I'm told comes from your butt.
Again.
So correct me if I'm wrong.
Lots of interesting medical theories swirling about here today.
I am a doctor.
You are. So. A it's very true. It's very true. All the best medical facts come from the English language program, English literature and film program.
That's right. That's right.
That's how they know.
Very helpful on planes.
Is there a doctor? Is there a doctor?
Why, yes. Madam.
I've seen the third man. What do you need?
So many times.
I have a opinion on Orson Welles. He wasn't that great, actually. They're like, he's dying, doctor. He's dying.
Then he'll die hearing my opinions on Citizen Kane.
He'll die a lucky man. More informed than he was before. Well.
Isn't that the best way to go?
Isn't that the way to go? I mean, I can only assume. Ah, well. Okay. It's been fun.
It has been fun.
Let's watch Fast and Furious to cap off our madcap heistness.
Oh, baby. Can't wait.
Wait. All right.
All right.
In the meantime, I've been Charlie.
I've been Mandy.
Bye.
Bye.